Over the past three decades, the Mesopotamian marshlands in south and southern Iraq, an area twice the size of the Florida Everglades, have suffered massive environmental degradation because of draining and pollution. But there are a few glimmers of hope as parts of the region are starting to return to ecological health, and nearly 50% of the marshlands have been restored. Joining us now is Azam Alwash, founder of the nonprofit environmental organization Nature Iraq that's led efforts to restore the marshes, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm well. There have been so many crises in Iraq going back at least to the Iran-Iraq war. Has the environmental health of the entire country been largely overlooked for much of that time?
Indeed. I mean, the Iraq-Iran war caused a huge amount of dislocation from the war itself, the draining of partial draining of the marshes as part of the war effort, the manufacture of high explosives, even before that, the oil production in Kirkuk and Basra has been quite detrimental to the effect of to the environment in general and the marshes in particular. And then, of course, the first Gulf War, the liberation of Kuwait, and the rebellion that took over Iraq at the time. And following that, the rebels went into the marshes as they have ever done since the days of Gilgamesh, which then pushed Saddam Hussein to dry the marshes, lest the rebels would be used by the West to undermine his regime.
He also poisoned parts of the land, didn't he?
Come again, sorry?
He not only drained the marshlands, he also poisoned parts of it?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, you know, initially he poisoned the water so that he can deprive the rebels from fish. Then, at a time when Iraq was not allowed to sell a single drop of oil, you know, the sanctions were on, the Food for Oil program was not on yet until 1996. At that time, the entire GDP of the nation, every piece of equipment that was available, owned by the government or the privates, was used to construct six major rivers and thousands upon thousands of kilometers of embankments to hold the water away from the marshes. In 2.5 years, he was able to divert the water of the Tigris and Euphrates away from the marshes and thus caused their death. And he didn't wait for the marshes to die a natural death. He set fire to the reeds, which flushed the rebels. And in a few short years, a civilization that had existed for, 7,000 years before was ended.
Well, it wasn't just rebels who were in the marshlands. Wasn't it home for many people? Didn't you grow
Indeed.
Up in the marshlands?
Yeah, 450,000 people derived their livelihood from the marshes, whether they be people living inside the marshes or on the perimeter of the marshes.
Mostly Shia?
Mostly Shia, yes. They are hospitable to the rebels. I mean, you know, they were not rebels themselves, but when the rebels come over, they are welcomed into their arms. And the rebels know the marshes better than the Iraqi army. Tanks cannot go inside the marshes. So essentially, the rebels owned southern Iraq during the night, and the army owned the on southern Iraq during the day. So it was inevitable that the Saddam regime would go about depriving his opposition of a place to operate from.
As I mentioned, the marshlands are quite large. How much biodiversity can they support?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. I mean, it's a very important place for migrating birds. I don't remember, 200-some species come through the marshes. From the plant point of view, it's not that that diverse, but what you have to understand is that this is a water world in the middle of a parched desert. So it is the only place where there is biodiversity in southern Iraq, other than, you have agriculture, organized agriculture in southern Iraq, but natural beauty, natural biodiversity, the home is the marshes.
Did the American authorities pay much attention to the Iraqi environment during the occupation? Did they look to what was going on in the marshlands?
The honest truth is no. There has been some efforts by USAID initially, but they were more focused on agricultural issues rather than marshes issues, which is okay. I mean, in the end, it's the people that count. What I keep on saying to people is that it's not Azam Alawis that restored the marshes. It's the Marsh Arabs that restored the marshes. I only helped in a marginal way by helping them make the right decisions as to where the breaches should happen.
And when did the restoration begin?
Even before Baghdad fell. I was talking the other day. We haven't figured out whether it was the 23rd or the 24th, the 25th of March when the first breaches occurred. But as we speak, we're coming to the 10-year anniversary of the restoration or the start of the restoration of the marshes. Although restoration is probably the wrong term. We should say the reflooding of the marshes.
Well, 50% of the marshlands have been restored. How was it done? Did you have to destroy the dams that Saddam Hussein had created?
Well, there were breaches in very critical places that allowed the water to come back in. For the longest time, the hydrology was not quite right. You know, the natural hydrology of southern Iraq is for the Tigris water to flow into the central marshes and from that into the Hammar marshes. What has happened, unfortunately, is that the Tigris is not allowed to come into the central marshes. So the hydrology is discombobulated. However, this has been fixed recently with the finishing of the construction of several regulators that we planned in accordance with the master plan for the restoration. The Ministry of Water Resources is about to begin the last piece of construction of regulators that would then regulate the water flow into the marshes and try to replicate mechanically the flooding action on which the marshes thrived. You see, with the drying of the marshes, Turkey began building the GAP project, which is a huge set of dams in the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates that essentially disrupted the flooding action that drove biodiversity in the marshes. The marshes' biodiversity was driven by the annual floods that come in with the snowmelt of the mountains of Kurdistan, bringing about 60% of the water of the Tigris and Euphrates into the marshes in the spring. And the timing of that pulse was very, very important. It comes in just as the reed come out of winter hibernation, just as the birds are migrating, and just as the fish is spawning. But more importantly, this flood results in the flooding of the agricultural land surrounding the marshes and in the central Euphrates region of Iraq. This has caused the agricultural production in Iraq to continue without the need for fertilizer for 7,000 years. The flood comes in, it washes away the salt that accumulates from evaporation from the year before, but more importantly, it deposited a new layer of silt and clay from the mountains of Kurdistan, renewing the productivity, the vitality of the farmlands. My concern for the future of Iraq is that, in fact, the flooding has caused the stoppage of this renewing process, and Iraq is slowly losing agricultural land. I am not worried about the marshes. I'm worried about agriculture, frankly. I think if Iraq does not do anything right now to deal with this issue, agriculture is going to die in the land where it was born.
We tend to think of the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers, in the West anyway, for their historical importance, but don't they also provide a large portion of the water in Iraq? Do people
Indeed.
Drink from the two rivers?
Oh, goodness, yes.
How pure is it? Don't pollutants, aren't they dropped into the water, into the rivers?
You know, for eternity, Iraq has used the Tigris and Euphrates as open sewers. Everything is dumped into the Tigris and Euphrates. And as long as there was water, dilution was the solution to pollution. Unfortunately, of course, due to the dams upstream and that flushing action is no longer happening. And the salinity of the water is increasing. You see, the Iraqi farmer, as well as the Turkish farmer, and the Kurdish, and the Syrian, and the Iranian, are still using the Sumerian method of irrigation, which essentially is flood irrigation. Well, that was fine and dandy as long as there were floods, because the floods kind of were nature's way of healing the soil. Without flooding, slowly salination is increasing because the drainage water gets dropped back into these rivers. And if you're upstream, then you're okay. But if you're downstream, which is where Iraq is, then your water is increasing in salinity, increasing in fertilizer content, nutrients, and pesticides. So Iraq, being on the tail end of the Tigris and Euphrates, is suffering the most from the practices upstream.
The last time you were on the show, we spoke a bit about efforts to bring ecotourism back to Iraq. Wow, what a Freudian slip. When are the marshes slated to become a national park?
Well, we just received good news 3 days ago. The decision to declare it, to declare the Central Marches as the national park moved from the Minister of Water Resources desk into the Prime Minister's office. We are hopeful that within the next couple of weeks, the Prime Minister will approve and move it to the Parliament. And I am assured that once it gets to the Parliament, it will be automatically approved. It's been a long, long trip, and I can see the end. Keep your fingers crossed. We've been here before, but I think we're finally going to be able to declare the first national park in Iraq shortly, and it will be gladly the National Park of the Central Marches, to be followed by national parks in the mountains of Kurdistan, the Kurdish region of Iraq. And Iraq is setting in place a plan to declare about 17% of its lands as protected areas as required by CITES, the international treaty.
Dr. Azam Alwash is the founder of the nonprofit environmental organization Nature Iraq. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you, sir.